Okay, it's 3 o'clock, and so we're going to start our second webinar or teleconference on the Paycheck Protection Program that the SBA is operating. And it's kind of unusual for those of us in the ag world to be dealing with the Small Business Administration. And so that's why Oklahoma Farm Bureau has been going to some special efforts to stay up to speed on the program and get the information out to our farmer and ranch members. And then we also have a number of members that are Main Street businessmen, and a lot of our farmers and ranchers operate secondary businesses of agricultural supply or manufacturing or have lots of friends that are involved in different small businesses. So this is a very unique program that the President and Congress came up with to try to help bridge our way through all the economic challenges that we're facing and dealing with the COVID-19 virus. And so in the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security, or CARES Act, that recently passed Congress, there were several big economic efforts to try to stabilize the economy and tide folks over until we can get businesses open and things operating back on somewhat of a normal terms. I'm going to tell you in a minute, things are going to be a little different today than we had planned, but I'm going to introduce first my co-host that's here with me today. We're delighted to have Steve Thompson, who's head of public policy at Oklahoma Farm Bureau and is an amazing talent and helping watch out for all of agricultural's interests at the state and federal capital. So, Steve, welcome aboard today.
Thanks, Rod. Appreciate everybody taking the time to call in and participate today.
On April 3rd, which is a week ago today, farms, ranches, and small businesses that had hired help of at least one person could start applying for the Paycheck Protection Program. And today, on April 10th, 1 week later, well, sole proprietors and independent contractors can start applying. The problem is those rules are supposed to come out during the night last night, so banks could start knowing what the rules were to do those programs today. And when we scheduled this call, we'd planned to have those rules so we could talk about that. Those rules are still not out. The SBA is still trying to get those solved and is hoping now to get them finished over the weekend. So if you call a bank today, if you're a sole proprietor or an independent contractor, they're probably going to tell you that they're still waiting for the rules and even the application form to use for sole proprietors. And so that data is probably not the specifics on how we're going to figure income and so forth for sole proprietors or payroll expense for sole proprietors and independent contractors is still missing. So there's going to be some questions we can't answer today. But and as a result of those rules not being out, Dottie Overall from the SBA and Kent Faison from Bank First felt it was better for them not to be on the call today till those rules are available. So once those specific rules are out, we'll probably do another call sometime during next week with more detail. But first, this is important enough. We thought we'd give you an update of where things are at kind of in the state and on this program and what timelines are involved and how the program works. I already mentioned the deadlines for those businesses that have any employment besides themselves can already be applying for the program. And in fact, an update, just talking with one bank that has lots of branches in the state, as of the end of the day yesterday, they had approvals on about 1,800 SBA 7A loans, which is what this Paycheck Protection Program is called, and those were for amount of $470 million. And so I'm certain there's well over 1,000 banks in the state. So I'm certain that we already have approved applications in our state for well over $1 billion, probably getting close to $2 billion. The overall program was approved by Congress for $349 billion. Well, Oklahoma is about 1% of the population of the country. So based on that, we'd normally figure that Oklahoma's share is going to be about $3.5 billion. So I'm going to guess that over half of the dollars that are eligible to our state have probably already been applied for. But most of those are probably from the a lot of the larger businesses that still qualify, you have to basically be an employer with under 500 employees to qualify for this program. And we mentioned in our last webinar, it's very unusual to have a government program that people often say, well, you can apply for a government grant or you can apply for a forgivable loan. Those are usually scams. I want to emphasize again, this is not a scam. This is a real program Congress has done to try to get money out in the economy. And the purpose of this is to encourage employers to hang on to their employees and or to bring them back on the payroll. So the essence of the program for those that have at least one employee that can apply now is you look at what your total employment expenditures were last year for the year 2019. So you add those 12 months together, including your cost for vacation pay, sick pay, hospitalization, and if you have a retirement plan, you can add the retirement plan in. You add all those costs for having employees and divide it by 12, and then you multiply it by 2.5 times, and that's the amount you can apply for a forgivable loan for. So the first part is to get that done and to turn it into your bank. There's forms to apply for the loan out on the SBA website. There's one that'll be marked Borrower Application Program for the Paycheck Protection Program. It's a really simple, if those of you that have ever worked with SBA before are used to dozens or hundreds of pages, it's really just a two-page form with a couple other pages attached to it that give definitions. And so you fill out that two-page form with a math work on how you got to the monthly payroll, and then multiply it times 2.5 times, and add the information on who the key, anybody that owns more than 20% of your business, and their social security numbers and titles. And then you answer a few fairly simple questions, and then you gather that with your payroll reports from last year and take them to the bank, and they'll enter it in the SBA portal. The responsibility for the honesty of the answers and all is on the applicant. The loans are 100% guaranteed by the federal government. And so the bank is mainly just doing a quick look over to make sure everything looks correct, meets their standards, and then enters it in the SBA portal. It's been taking, once they enter it in the SBA portal, it's been taking 1 to 3 days to get approvals back from the SBA. And then the banks are usually looking to get the loan funded the following week after the approval. The next stage after that, the terms are 1% interest rate for a maximum of 2 years. Now, some banks are doing it for 6-month loans. Some are doing it for 1-year loans, but the longest it can be is a 2-year loan at 1% interest rate. Then after June 30th, you go back into the bank and with your payroll records for the 8-week period after you got your first disbursement. And that'll be the period on which they'll judge how much payroll you've got that will be forgiven. And you can also use some, at least 75% of the forgiven amount has to be payroll or payroll-related expenses like hospitalization. And another 25% can be for rent like if you're renting your farmland, or rent like if you're renting office space. It can also be for the interest only on a mortgage loan if you already own your own property, and it can be for utilities. So that'll be the first phase is applying for and getting the loan. The second phase is after June 30th when you go back into the bank to show how you've spent that money on hiring people and keeping your business operating and get the loan forgiven. So that's, what have I missed in the general scenario there, Steve, that we need to go to before we start to talk about some questions?
Well, I think that's a pretty good broad overview for that. I think, you know, where we've heard mostly from folks was with 1,000 specific questions, and many of those we're still working on answers, but on a few of them, I think we can address directly. So might as well go ahead and launch right off into some of those.
I'd say one of the questions you and I were visiting beforehand that we've gotten some of the most questions on have been that my bank is not participating. So where can I do this? the legislation allowed every bank in the state, well, for that matter, every bank in the country to participate, even if they have not been an SBA bank in the past. Now, a bank, if they haven't been participating with SBA in the past, they have to do some paperwork to get set up with the SBA. So there may be some bank, well, we know for a fact there's some banks that are choosing not to do that. So your bank, in fact, we talked to one of our board members that is in a town, close to a town where there's three banks, and I think none of those three banks were doing it. So they had to go to a larger town in the adjacent county. But every bank in the state can participate if they choose to. They just have to do some paperwork to get set up with the SBA if they haven't already done that. Also, every credit union can participate if they choose to get it set up with the SBA. And even Farm Credit is allowed by law to be to participate. The last I heard, most of our Farm Credits in Oklahoma felt we have enough banks that they were not setting up themselves, but were planning on having the banks do that role. There are well over 1,000 banks in our state. In fact, I just, before getting on here, made a list to give you an idea. There's a number of banks that have lots of branches. The ones with the most branches, just to give you an idea, Bank First has 120 branches. Arvest has 98, Bank of Oklahoma 54, Mid-First 49, International Bank of Commerce 47, RCB 39, City National 38, and the list goes on and on down to lots of banks with only one location. But whether they have one location or 120, they can participate, but it's a bank decision on whether they're going to do that. Almost all the banks with lots of locations, in fact, everyone that I know of is doing it, are the ones with lots of locations. Some of them, however, have a policy of only servicing folks that have a current account with them. And so they may tell you no if you don't already have a banking account with them. There's other banks that are saying, okay, yes, we will service you after we're done catching up with our existing customers, but you will need to open a bank account in order for us to do it, because they want to establish a banking relationship with you. And then there's some banks that are saying, hey, we see this as a chance to develop new relationships. And this week I've had several banks call to tell me that no matter where in the state someone's at, they're willing to talk to someone and to work with them. So if you don't have a bank in your community that's willing to talk to you, let Steve or I know, or your field person know in Farm Bureau, and we'll get you the names of some banks that have said they'll talk to you no matter where you're at. The banks will earn that 1% interest rate, which is certainly not a great return for them, but they also get paid a fee by the government for processing these. So depending on the size of the loan, they're going to get from 5% on loans that are up to $350,000 and down to a low of 1% on loans that are over $2 million. These PPP loans, forgivable loans, they can be, the smallest that I've heard of so far is around $4,000 or $5,000, and the biggest is near the limit of $10 million. So that you cannot do a PPP loan for more than $10 million. In agriculture, Steve and I were talking, and I've heard of agricultural PPP loans that are anywhere from $4,000 or $5,000 to a couple that are above $2 million, so depending on the size of their payroll. So again, they have to have under 500 employees to qualify, and the most you can borrow is $10 million if you had that large of an employment base. But talk to your local banker who you have a relationship with first. If that doesn't work, then think about other bankers you may already know, or the next bigger town that's close to your town to go to. Or if you still need help, let one of us know at Farm Bureau, and we'll get you names of somebody that will work with you no matter where you're at. Does that cover the banking thing good enough, you think, Steve?
I think so. And want to remind everybody, if you have a question specifically you'd like us to address, Dustin is compiling those. His number is 405-627-9057. If you can send a text message to 405-627-9057.
Where there's a lot of these deals have gotten done now. Like I mentioned, the one bank has done 1,800 payroll folks have different packages have processed through their bank already, and you multiply that times all the other banks, you can get some idea of the scale. and essentially every farm, ranch, and small business qualifies. Now, we've had a couple members that say they're philosophically opposed and concerned about the high level of debt that the country's taken on. You don't have to participate. If you choose not to, you don't need to. But if you do want to participate, it won't happen unless you fill out the application and take it to a bank and apply. So unlike the benefit that's coming to individuals out of the CARES Act, where each individual is going to get a $1,200 check and each couple is going to get a $2,400 check and then $500 for each child that will be coming sometime over the next few weeks, that comes regardless if you take action or not, for the most part, unless you're totally missing in the government records. But this Small Business Paycheck Protection Act will not happen unless you initiate the action and fill out the application and go to your bank.
We had a question come in about credit unions while we were on the banking and lending topic.
Credit unions are authorized to participate. And from the phone calls we've had here at Farm Bureau this last week, there are some credit unions that are participating and some that aren't. So you'll have to check with your specific credit union to find out if they're participating or not. I would say that it's unusual. Very few credit unions have had SBA experience in the past, where there's a number of banks that have had SBA experience. So probably most all the credit unions will have to initiate some paperwork with the SBA to get set up to do this program. They won't have been a pre-approved lender, but they certainly can do that. And you'll just have to find out if they've already done that or if they're planning to do it. Another question that just came in is, there've been a lot of coverage about how quickly the money's going out, that even though it's $349 billion, that it's being committed very rapidly. And so how long do we think the money's gonna last? And will we actually run out, especially when sole proprietors haven't even been able to apply? In a visit we had with the SBA yesterday, they think the current funds will last till the 1st of May. And you have to apply, the latest you can apply if money's still available is June 30th. And technically it does run out whenever they run out of money. Now, Senator McConnell has already announced that he's planning to appropriate another $250 billion because of the high demand. They thought they had estimated how much the small business and farm and ranch payroll was in our country, but they've also allowed the program to include nonprofits and to include churches, which were harder to know what the numbers were. And so the interest level to date has been, in 1 week, they've gone through enough of the funds that it's created concern whether the funds will last all the way to June 30th. And so the U.S. Senate and the President have already indicated a willingness to fund another $250 billion to make sure that every small business and every church and every nonprofit that applies is able to be funded. But that other $250 billion has not been funded yet. So there is a possibility that if the $349 billion does get committed, there could be a gap before the additional funds are available. But at the moment, the House is holding out because they don't want to just do the $250 billion for farms, ranches, and small business. They want a bunch of other things in exchange for doing that program. So there's a little negotiation or arguing going on between the House and Senate about that additional $250 billion at the moment. But don't you think, Steve, it's pretty clear that I think it will definitely get done. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that both parties and both houses of Congress have support for replenishing these funds if they run out. It's just there are a handful of issues kind of as a hurdle right now. But ultimately, whether that's a matter of a day or a week, we really don't know. But I think both sides are supportive, and the White House to topping this fund off if it runs dry.
Before we totally leave the bank and credit union deal, let me point out one other deal. If you've applied at a bank and have gotten frustrated that they're so stacked up that they haven't got yours turned into the SBA, and you keep calling and they say they're trying to work through their backlog, you don't want to go apply at another bank or credit union unless you make sure they have not applied to the SBA and you get it back. You're only allowed to make one application And although virtually every application I've heard of has gotten approved, I have not to date had a single person come back to us here at Farm Bureau to say they have not been approved once they submitted. There's some real concerns and penalties about if you apply more than once. So, and how you apply the first time, it needs to be the right time, because there, you don't get to go back and modify it. So make sure, if you need to visit with your accountant or your bookkeeper before you turn it in, do that before you turn it in. But make sure you, when you turn it in correctly, and don't apply more than once, because that will get you in troubles.
We had a good question come in about ag cooperatives.
That was a week ago. We could not answer that. There was a big question about whether ag cooperatives qualified, and the fact there were dissenting opinions depending on whether you were getting answers from the USDA or from SBA. At first, the SBA was saying no, and USDA was saying yes. And the SBA, it's an SBA program, so they've got the most powerful answer. But in the week that's intervened, it's now become clear that, don't you feel comfortable to say that ag cooperatives can?
Absolutely.
Can, yeah, apply. We have good direction from the ag cooperatives, from the USDA, from SBA, and that ag cooperatives do qualify now. So if you're on the board of an ag cooperative, they can apply just like your farm or ranch or a small business can, with the same rule of figuring out your average payroll for last year, and you can borrow 2.5 times that amount.
Yeah, no, they, after some help from Farm Bureau and Senator Lankford and the
Congressman Lucas, on
Congressman Lucas, very, very much so, and the National Ag Co-op group, the White House through the Treasury Department, SBA, actually issued a specific statement on that, I think, if it was late Friday night or into Saturday, just a kind of an additional note clarifying that with ag co-ops, because it had been, they'd been told otherwise, and finally put enough pressure to get that clarified in an affirmative direction.
And that's a big deal, because we, in our state, we have a number of ag cooperatives, and of course, lots of our Farm Bureau members are members of ag cooperatives and serve on their boards. And so, so we would call that to your attention. And again, a special shout out to both Lucas and Lankford on that. They've not just been fighting for Oklahoma's interest on this, but they've been big players on solving these subjects on a national level. Speaking of solving issues on a national level, many of our members, here it is Good Friday, a very special religious holiday, and it's going to be, it seems very weird to not have been able to attend church in person with our family and friends last week for Palm Sunday or this week for Easter, but we hope each of you will remember that most important of all events, and as we are on Good Friday now, and as we get ready for Easter. And Senator Lankford has probably been the leader nationally to make sure that churches were included in the CARES Act, and they also qualify by looking at what their payroll expenses were in 2019, dividing that by 12 and then times 2.5, and churches can apply for a forgivable loan that will be forgiven if they're still spending for payroll and overhead in the 8 weeks after they get the grant. So when you go in to forgive on any of these notes, if your payroll expenses are less than they were at the time of the loan, then the amount that's not forgiven will be a loan that stays on the book at 1% interest rate for that up to 2-year period. But those of you that are elders or deacons or leaders in your churches across the state, again, there's probably never been a program at SBA that churches or religious groups qualified for before. So just like farmers and ranchers aren't used to going to check out SBA programs, I would say it's safe to say that churches aren't used to going to look at SBA programs. And so it's probably only by you visiting with your pastors or your church leadership, or many of you, as I say, are the church leadership. But your churches can apply for this Paycheck Protection Program support as well.
Rod, while you're on some sort of non-traditional SBA customers, we'd had questions about rural water districts and municipalities, and even some folks with our wife and our program want to know about public school districts. What are some of those entities faced with here?
Our understanding to date, and again, Steve and I, neither one are lawyers, but we've been knee deep in this for several weeks now, but that the municipal governments do not qualify for the Paycheck Protection Program from all the information we've seen. Neither do school districts. Rural water districts, we believe, may qualify based upon, depending on how they're organized. But we think the way that most Oklahoma rural water districts are organized, that many of them will qualify and can apply. So if in doubt, visit again with your local bank or call the SBA or call us, and we'll, you know, we're here at Farm Bureau, and we'll help you figure that out. But we believe the answer is no on schools and municipal governments, and likely yes on most rural water districts.
Another topic a lot at the heart of a lot of our people's concerns had to do with what may or may not be coming down from USDA through FSA and some of the money that we talked about that were in the CARES bill. I know a lot of folks were concerned that if they participated in this PPP program, perhaps that would make them ineligible or offset what they would qualify for FSA. What do you know about that, Ron?
I think we have real clarity now. We weren't as sure a week ago. Now I would say it's quite clear that the SBA programs stand on their own and the USDA programs stand on their own. We had the Assistant Secretary of Agriculture on a call that Steve and I were on, was that yesterday or day before? And he made it quite clear that USDA would not hold participation in the Paycheck Protection Act or any other SBA program against a farmer on the current programs that are available or the programs we're expecting out of the $9.5 billion that was appropriated to the secretary. By the way, I'll use this as a chance to plug. We're planning a couple more of these webinars soon. One's going to be on Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, looking at the what's going on in the beef markets. And so there's separate data out there on our Farm Bureau Facebook page and on the Farm Bureau web pages where you can learn about that. We're going to have Dr. Daryl Peel from OSU and a couple of the folks that work the beef issues for American Farm Bureau on a call to go through what all's happening in the beef market and the disparities and why we're dealing with disparities in pricing at different levels of the beef chain and so forth. So we'd welcome you on that call. Also, we're planning a call within days after the Secretary Perdue announces how he's going to allocate the $9.5 billion that was given to his office to help support ag operations during this crisis. So we don't have a time set for that yet because we don't know exactly which day Secretary Perdue will be announcing that, but when he does, Dustin, the communication staff, and Steve and Thad and I will all be responding with a follow-up seminar very soon. So did we cover the question there, or
yeah,
did I get sidetracked?
So. No, I think so. No, that's good. Another ag-specific question that we received a lot of in the last couple of weeks had to do with the eligible rent expenses and if farmland, if ag land and the rental arrangements that we make in our industry were considered an eligible expense for the PPP program.
If you're the farmer that's renting the land, that in all the opinions we've seen, that will qualify for up to 25% of your forgiveness. That rent expense would qualify. It's still payroll driven first. So 75% of the forgiveness has to be off of payroll in the 8 weeks after you get the forgivable loan, and up to 25% can be from rent or utilities. And so renting the land would qualify. Now, if you're the person who's renting the land, then it's passive income, and that does not, unless you're participating in it as well, but passive income does not, would not play into the mix, but the actual cost of rent would be a factor that you could use in the forgiveness.
Talking about payroll, we had one just come in through the text messages through Dustin about how you are to calculate your payroll. Do you use your numbers from all of 2019, or do you count backwards from the last 12 months?
You use for the calendar year 2019 as long as you were in business for the whole year of 2019. So if you were in business for that full year, you don't go backwards from today's date 12 months. You use the calendar year of 2019. Now, like anything, there's a couple of exceptions. Let's say you're a brand new business. Only people that are in business on February 15th, 2020 qualify. But if you started in business after January 15th, but were in business by February 15th, you would qualify. But then you obviously wouldn't have 12 months of payroll to look at and to divide by 12 and then times 2.5. So it would be based on your payroll during that very short time from January 1st to February 15th, just figured out to a monthly average. So, for most of our members have been in business for multiple years, some of them decades and decades, and some are Centennial Farms. So for the most part, it's going to be the whole calendar year of 2019.
Talking about the February 15th date being there, what about if you have recently increased the number of your employees? Would that February 15th date be the cutoff you use for determining that as well?
Regrettably, if you were in business for all of 2019, you can't take into account this recent increase. It's still based on your average from the year 2019.
While we're on employees, Rod, I know there were some things regarding employee leave that you wanted to cover while we were on today.
Yes, sir. This is totally different than the SBA program, but also tied to the COVID-19 legislation. We were in fact appreciative of Senator Inhofe and Senator Lankford standing up on the first COVID bill to be against it because of some of the mandates it put on business. And they turned out they were in a fairly small minority of in the Senate on that deal, but they were trying to stand up to represent us. But that first COVID-19 legislation included a new leave policy that's 2 weeks of paid leave for anybody who's got COVID-19 or is been exposed to someone with COVID-19 and needs to stay away. And then it also has some clauses in there for pay at 2/3 if they're staying home to take care of a relative or someone they're responsible for caring for. One thing that did get in there is an exemption for firms under 50. So if you're a business since most people on today have under 500 employees, since we're to hear what we're talking about with Paycheck Protection. In fact, certainly our Farm Bureau members, it's rare to have somebody that would be bigger than that 500. But if you're 50 or more, that's mandatory for the new COVID-19 leave policy from now to the end of the year. But if you're under 50, you can still do that voluntarily as long as you do it to your full staff. And if you do it, it is deductible dollar for dollar on your quarterly tax return, on your quarterly payroll tax return. So you can choose to do the leave and deduct it on your quarterly payroll tax, but you don't have to do it if you've got under 50 employees.
Talking about some things a little bit outside of PPP that are related, can a business apply with SBA both for the PPP and the Emergency Disaster Loan Program that we hear a lot about, the EIDL?
You can apply for both. And we have not talked much about the EIDL, but that's a separate loan if your business has suffered exceptional injury. I will tell you, in the Farm Bureau world, it's very limited on the economic injury disaster loan because most of agriculture does not qualify for that. Aquaculture farms, nurseries, and agricultural suppliers or vendors would qualify, but farm and ranch operations are not allowed to apply for that program as it currently stands. Now, Farm Bureau has been doing letters to the all the key players in Washington, arguing that many of Congress, when they were doing the negotiations, had the intention to open that program up to all of agriculture as well. But in the final wording, that did not get done according to the interpretation of the SBA lawyers. So most of agriculture does not qualify for that. But if you're an ag supplier, if you're in the nursery business, if you're in the aquaculture business, or if you're some other Main Street business, you can also go out on the SBA website and look at the EIDL, Economic Injury Disaster Loans. And that has another interesting feature. If you qualify and apply for that, it comes with a $10,000 grant, whether you're approved for that loan or not approved for that loan, as long as you meet the requirements of applying. So, like I say, most farms and ranches cannot apply, but you should know that's out there, and Farm Bureau is working to try to get that program opened up for all the farms and ranches as well at some point in the future.
Speaking of Farm Bureaus, I had a question come in about county Farm Bureaus, whether or not those organizations and those offices could apply.
Well, we spent a lot of time on that, haven't we, Steve?
Yeah.
It turns out our county Farm Bureaus in Oklahoma are organized as 501c5s, and they are not allowed to apply for the PPP. The 501c3s, which is what most nonprofits, churches which may not be registered as 501c3s but act like a 501c3, and then veterans organizations, which I think are 501c19s, qualify. But 501c5s, which I could not have told you that's what county farm bureaus were till this all came up, but now we've gone back and looked at the papers, and so county farm bureaus do not qualify because of that. By the way, there's, I guess, another thing AFBF and state farm bureaus are doing is trying to, if there is another coronavirus bill, they're maybe hoping to clean that up and get C5s included, but at the moment they do not qualify.
A lot of folks texting in about where some of this stuff may be located so they can verify that for their records and to talk to their bank about what we're basing some of this on regarding where we might find an official declaration on the SBA materials saying that farmers and ranchers are eligible for this program. I know that the USDA has had some good things out on their Q&A about this, but Rod, I don't know if SBA has talked about specifically agriculture, or that's just something that we've heard through our congressional friends in the USDA.
No, the SBA has now put out things acknowledging that farms and ranches do qualify for the PPP, and in fact, it's made it into all the bankers have all been getting a deal from the American Bankers Association and the Oklahoma Bankers Association that goes over who all qualifies, and their Q's and A's and their answers have all made it very clear that farms and ranches do qualify as well. If you run into a problem at your local bank questioning whether farms and ranches qualify, get with your field person at Farm Bureau or call Steve or Thad or I, and we'll get you copies of some of the documents, or call your bank directly to visit with them. And if we need to, we'll get the SBA to call them to verify. But there is no question now that farms and ranches do qualify for the PPP. And again, a special thanks to in Oklahoma, Senator Lankford and Congressman Lucas have both gone above and beyond to help clear up a bunch of those things and bring clarity to that.
This might be a good time, Rod, for some folks who joined us late to go ahead and revisit the status on the sole proprietor stuff, because truly still the majority of our questions are related to that and the limbo we're in there. So you might want to kind of recap that again.
And we'll tell you how we think that's going to work. We planned this call thinking that the sole proprietor and independent contractor rules would be out overnight, and you were supposed to be able to start applying at the bank today. But let's go over first what some examples of independent contractors, and you may help me on this one, but if someone's a custom harvester, that would be an independent contractor. If someone's a fence builder that goes around, what they do is go around building fences for their neighbors, or there's countless roles. The people you would pay with a 1099, those are independent contractors, and you cannot add them to your payroll for the purposes of your 7A loan or your forgivable loan, but they can apply themselves. And some of those occupations where it's a service or something, it's probably pretty easy to add up what their income is from those 1099 activities. And that is probably going to be what their income is for 2019 to add up for the year, divide by 12, and then times 2.5. If it's that kind of 1099 activity. Now, we expect it to have the same $100,000 cap per year that is, which I don't know if we've mentioned today, but that's the most you can apply for any one person when you're adding up your payroll. So, and for most of us in agriculture, that's probably not a problem. But if there's people on your payroll that make over 100,000, only the first 100,000 counts when you're adding up the payroll for the purposes of figuring out the amount that you can borrow. So the independent contractors, another example of independent contractor in the Farm Bureau world would be our insurance agents. Most of them are independent contractors. And so so they can add up the first $100,000 of income and divide that by 12 and then times 2.5. So they would be able to borrow about $21,000 and then get it forgiven. If you're a sole proprietor, that's where it gets a lot trickier to figure out, because a lot of farm and ranch operations don't take a paycheck. They take a draw out of the farm or business when they need money or the kids need something. And so it's maybe not a pay every Monday or pay every other Friday. It's probably less clear than that. And we've had several questions coming in, you know, what if your farm had an operating loss last year? Will you be able to participate, you know, if you had a loss in your sole proprietorship? And that's the questions that we can't answer yet today, that we're waiting on the SBA. But I think the answer is probably pretty clear for the folks that do service work on a 1099 basis. It's probably pretty clear for our things like our insurance agents. It's probably less clear for the sole proprietorships, and that's what we're waiting for, these new rules. And as soon as those are available, we will certainly study them and get that word out to you and likely do another of these webinars.
And we had been instructed those would be available last night. They got delayed. As you can imagine, there's a lot of things moving down the line right now. And so we again, the new date for that is expected to be possibly over the weekend sometime. One of the questions I've read quite a bit about, Rod, was if on my farm I've got H-2A or H-2B workers, can I use what I pay them to count towards my employee expense to turn in for the loan?
The SBA right now is saying that only labor, and they're doing this based on the way the legislation was written, that only labor that's the principal residence is here in the United States can count. So they're saying that H-2A and H-2B labor cannot count because their principal residence is outside the country. American Farm Bureau is fighting that definition and is trying to get a different ruling, since many of those folks spend 10 months of the year here and so forth. But at the moment, if you apply, and it's possible some banks might approve it with that included in your labor, but when it comes time for forgivability, there will be more rules out by then. And at the moment, it's pretty clear that those would not be included in the pay that you could be forgiven for. So the official answer is at the moment is that H-2A and H-2B payroll does not count in figuring your payroll number, and the ability to get those payrolls forgiven for the 8-week period is very questionable.
Again, we've had a lot of sole proprietor questions that are difficult to ask with any certainty, but there's one here that I think that Rod, the general principle should apply across the board about what the limit on the size of a loan for the sole proprietors might be. What do we expect that to look like?
Well, the limit overall is $10 million, but the limit of income for a person, if you're a sole proprietor, I think the limit's going to be $100,000 worth of income. So you'd take that $100,000, divide by 12, and then times 2.5. So that's going to be a little over $20,000 that you could apply for on the forgivable loan. So I think the answer for a sole proprietor is that the maximum is going to be a little over $20,000 that you can apply for. I'll be shocked if it kind of turns out different than that. Does that match with what you're expecting?
No, I think that sounds about right. And it's just one of those things that you got to look at how this has been shaped up and anticipate. But then again, it helps to have a good banker and to work with them once the rules hit. And so we can't encourage you enough to make sure you work with the people you know in your community there at the lending institutions to make sure that you're on the same page as they are, as the SBA is.
I just take that maximum here, and we're doing this live. If you could see us on the calculator on our phone, 100,000 divided by 12 would be $8,333.33 for the average monthly payroll. Then if you take that times 2.5, that would be $20,833.33. So I think that's going to be the answer as the maximum for a sole proprietor. If you're a sole proprietor and you're, and by whatever definition of income comes out, let's say it was $40,000, we'd take $40,000 and divide by 12. And so that's going to be, I should have cleared the phone before I did that, just like on a calculator, divide by 12. So that's going to be 3,333 times 2.5. So someone with $40,000 of income, their forgivable loan would be for $8,333. So how they define that income for sole proprietor is the part that's still in question if it's under 100,000, but 100,000 I'm certain is going to be the max. And so the sole proprietor, the most they can probably apply for is at just over $20,000.
Well, I knew we could count on some of our favorite members out there, Rod. We had a great question come in that I think this is going to stump you maybe, about the H-2A workers. And while their salary expense certainly doesn't qualify, what about the amount that you as the farm owner pay for their housing and utilities while they're here? Would that count towards that category of the loan program?
I think the answer based on the phone visits we've been having is no, that it's the expenses related to the employees that get down on the program. So there's some specialty questions like that we're still trying to get answers to. So I would say that's not a 100% definitive, but I think the spirit of where they're at the moment is it's only going to be expenses related to the employees you're allowed to count in the payroll.
Well, I think maybe a good time to kind of go back and kind of recap the overall thing there and give one last call out for questions and head towards wrapping up.
PPP is the nickname the program's called. It's the SBA. It's through the U.S. Small Business Administration, and that stands for Paycheck Protection Program. And basically, every farm, every ranch, every small business on Main Street, I say that. I just now remember there's every small business that's doing things that are legal at the local, state, and federal level. So we in our state, we have, for instance, marijuana production operations is the example people are using that's not legal federally. So they do not qualify. But most all businesses on Main Street and most all suppliers to the ag industry and even your churches and nonprofits in town, anybody that has payroll is kind of the deciding line. So if you have payroll and are a totally legal business at all levels of government, you qualify for the PPP program, which is the forgivable loan, which is essentially 2.5 months worth of your payroll expense. When you go in to get it forgiven, it doesn't have to all be payroll at that time. But 75% of it has to be payroll expenses during that 8-week period after you get your disbursement from the bank, and 25% can be utilities and overhead. But the goal that Congress and the president had is to keep people on the payroll, to keep people on the payroll at your farm or ranch or at the diner in town or at the travel agency or at the florist shop. So the goal is to keep folks on the payroll, and as we get done with the COVID thing, so that they're still there and the economy can start back up quicker. So that's the theory of the whole program. But you apply through your local bank, credit union, or farm credit. I would say in Oklahoma, most all the action is through banks. Every bank can do it, but not all banks are doing it. If your bank is not doing it, well, you need to find another bank very soon to go in and talk to. It's a fairly simple 2-page form. The hardest part of the form is probably figuring out what your average payroll was for last year, pulling the numbers together for your, and you, besides pulling your payroll number together, if you have hospitalization or you have retirement or other payroll expenses like that, add those to your payroll number when you're coming up with that monthly number, and then you'll do it 2.5 times that.
We got a couple of last minute questions we may have time here to squeeze in. Someone asking about husband and wife who are operating as a joint venture, are they considered two entities?
Ooh, that's a stumper. I haven't been asked that one before. I think I would encourage you, hopefully if you're sophisticated enough to have a joint venture, you've probably got an accountant. I'd probably get your accountant involved in that one, but you want to make sure and figure that out before you fill out the application. I don't feel competent to answer that one. Do you?
I think that would be a CPA or a banker question, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Take the time now also to remind you about the cattle industry webinar we're going to have next week, that Tuesday, April 14th at 7 p.m. I know that Dustin and the team have some information on all our social media channels as well as the website, okfarmbureau.org. Rod, you may tell them a little bit about who all is going to participate in that.
We're going to have two of the really sharp staff from American Farm Bureau, Scott and I'm trying to remember.
Is it Michael next?
Scott and Michael. Yeah, Scott and Michael from the AFBF National Staff. They're off the economic team, have amazing knowledge of what all is going on in the market, and are going to share a lot of their insight. And then we're going to localize it by involving Dr. Darrell Peel from OSU that's agreed to participate. So those three will have kind of a roundtable discussion, and Dustin Melke is head of our communications, and myself, and those three are going to talk about what all is going on in the cattle market and what some of the challenges ahead and what some of the answers ahead may be. So that with beef being our biggest dollar commodity in Oklahoma, it's a very, very important subject. And of course, the beef market has just been turned upside down with so much change in such a short period of time here with dealing with the virus. And we had already had the shakeup earlier with the loss of the Tyson plant up in Kansas after the fire at one point. So this has been that incident on steroids, so to speak. So, and just a plug for the other, we also will be doing another webinar very soon on the, whenever the secretary announces what he's gonna do with the $9.5 billion of emergency aid for agriculture, how he's gonna target that and how people are gonna access that. We will also use this webinar technology to bring on whatever experts we need to and to talk about that at that time. There's also $14 billion that was in the CARES Act that went to CCC, and when we know how that's gonna be used, we'll be trying to get that word out to you as well. So we're trying hard to be to make information available to you just as soon as we know it, so that you have the chance to figure out how to help your farm and business survive. I would just, as we close here, we know this isn't hitting everybody evenly. Some folks, you know, look at like the egg industry, and suddenly eggs are sales are skyrocketing and the price is skyrocketing. We have other commodities like beef and pork and chicken that are under exceptional stress. And a lot of that is that such change in the marketplace. 54% of all the food had been going to institutional distributors, to colleges and hospitals and convention centers and hotels and restaurants. And 46% have been going to groceries. Now, all of a sudden, in just a couple week period, that's shifted to like 80 or 85% going to grocery store channels, which is different packaging, different suppliers. So it's, to use the chickens as an example, the guys that are raising chickens for Tyson's or Purdue's, those guys, even though they had institutional, they had big grocery chain distributions. And so it's easier for them to switch part of their production that was going to institutional over to grocery. But if you were growing for a chicken operation that mainly was institutional, they may be in a real crisis, and suddenly their market has dropped by 70 or 80%, and so those growers are in real distress right now, and a lot of them are not getting in new chickens, or maybe even getting orders not to finish the chickens they've got. So that's an example of how different it hits folks depending on what part of the food channel that you're in. And we all know what's happening to restaurants and travel agents, but I'll use here in our state, I'm in the horticulture business where as long as we can keep the doors open at growers or garden centers, there's lots more people wanting to start their own garden and to garden. And so those guys are going to hold up okay, unless they were an Easter lily grower. And then there are big troubles because there's no churches for Easter lilies. But if you're a florist, it's kind of like a travel agent. There's no weddings, there's no funerals, there's no hospital visits, there's no parties. So they're in extreme distress, just like a travel agent. So it's a very uneven in how it's affecting folks. So no matter what part of the chain you're in the agricultural chain, we're trying to be here to get information to you. And so we'll keep using this technology, and we welcome your suggestions on other things that would be helpful. Please let Thad Doy, our executive director, or Steve Thompson, who I've enjoyed sharing this forum with today, or myself know, or any of your board members or field folks, and we'll do our best to have Farm Bureau be your Farm Bureau, trying to help get you answers and take care of you. So, Steve, anything else you want to wrap up?
I just want to reemphasize what you said there on behalf of the Public Policy Division. We rely heavily on our excellent field services team, so I would encourage you to reach out to your area field rep if you have any questions or concern, and they'll help us find that answer for you. And so as we move forward, that we can be responsive to you, and we can provide information through these channels that targets the questions you need to know. So please track down your field rep in your area or any of us, and we'll be happy to try to do some research for you.
Well, as we wrap up today, we want to thank you very much for your attention. We hope this information has been helpful. We hope you'll share this with your fellow farmers and ranchers. We know we don't have the usual coffee shop thing going where everybody exchanges lots of information out across the state. So so as you're talking to one another on the phone or passing each other and open the pickup windows to talk to each other, besides checking up on each other, you might share some of this kind of information or refer them to our website to listen in on this. And any way we can help, we're anxious to do that and to be of service. And as soon as we do get the final rules on the sole proprietor and independent contractor, we'll figure a way to get that to you. So thank you all for joining us today. Hope you have a very, very special Easter and enjoy some time with your family, either in person or by telephone or even standing out in the yard at 6 feet apart. So talk to you soon. Over and out.
Bye-bye.